Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of the Planning Period Podcast. You're Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Trefler. When I started the show in May, I didn't think far enough ahead to plan out for my year, figure out what weeks, what episodes would release, or consider reaching the end of 2017. Yet, here we are. This is episode 30, and will indeed be the end of 2017. It's released on December 29th, if you're listening on release day. I would like to start this episode by saying Happy New Year to all of you, and thank you all so much for joining me on this journey so far. I'm not one for New Year's resolutions, and I am tremendously happy with and proud of the way this podcast has grown in the last 8 months. So instead of some crazy goal for the next year of the show, I'm just going to enjoy the ride and just keep on moving forward. This week on the show, I'm joined by Dr. Will Dayenport, most commonly known as Dr. Will. I know Dr. Will from the Education Podcasters Voxer group I'm in, and as I say in the interview, he adds so much to that group. He is just completely and utterly himself, and it is so much fun to listen to all the time. Dr. Will and I talk about the problems with testing and over-reliance on it, teachers needing to make that money and manage their brand, and the power of being a connected educator. So, sit back and enjoy episode 30 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Dr. Will Dayenport. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler, as always. I'm really genuinely excited to be able to talk to this guest tonight because we have scheduled and rescheduled, and I'm terrible at time zones, and it has just kind of been an effort to make this happen, and I believe it will be worth it, because tonight I'm joined by Dr. Will Dayenport, known as Dr. Will, and I'm really excited to talk to him because he's in a podcasting Voxer group that I'm in, and since he has joined it, that group has gotten much more lively, and he just brings an energy and a passion to that group and to education that I just know my audience is going to love, and I'm thrilled to be able to talk to him. So, hey, welcome to the show, Dr. Will.
Thank you. I appreciate that introduction. Thank you.
Absolutely. And for my audience who don't know you, who are you and what are you up to these days?
Well, I like to consider myself to be a connected educator. I am all in on digital. As I tell people, I'm instructional technologist by day and I guess podcaster by night. My wife and I also own a digital education consulting company where we will be launching online courses for teachers starting possibly in January or March. And teachers who take those courses will be able to earn CEUs. We have backing from a local university here. And I do freelance writing for edtech companies as well.
Cool. And where is here? Where are you at?
I am in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Mississippi. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Very neat. All right. You know, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to my show. I assume you haven't because nobody does. And my show is very informal. I like to just have conversations. And I have kind of a guiding set of three questions that have done me well so far leading into conversations. And with you, Dr. Will, you and I have talked on Voxer and stuff. And so I'm just going to kind of jump right into my questions tonight. And my first question for you is a big one, and it's, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Testing. We hear a lot of stuff, and we see a lot of stuff on Twitter about grades and grading and personalization and all of those things. And quite honestly, I'm going to say this, and hopefully I don't offend anyone, but that's just small potatoes that I really don't care about because at the end of the day, it's testing. Because when you have schools, particularly Title I schools, who rely so heavily on state funding and federal funding, they are scared to death about test scores. They're not going to be imaginative. They're not going to be creative. Innovation. They can't spell innovation because, again, they're not concerned about that. You'll have a school they'll spend $300,000 on devices and will still have teachers teaching the same way. They'll still buy canned curriculum, rote memorization, all of this stuff. And why? Because of testing. Because they're not focused on student learning. I don't care what they say. They are focused on getting these cut scores from the tech, from the state, so that no one comes in and shuts them down or put them on a list of failing schools or have to report in the newspaper that they're an F school. So testing to me is the greatest problem. And it also negates the fact that each individual has their own talents, interests, passions, and things that they want to learn and grow from. And when you have this normative test at the end of the year that says that all students must be here, it's just dumb. As opposed to, let's say, NWEA, which is one of those tests that districts around the country takes. And normally they take it 3 times a year. So in looking at that test, if a student had a RIT score of 178, which is a low score if, let's say, you're in the 9th grade, if they had that in August, but then they had a 200 in December, and then in March they had a 250, that student grew. And the teachers and the district, the principals, everyone should clap their hands, you know, that that student showed progress. But guess what? That doesn't mean diddly squat. Because if that student didn't hit that benchmark that the state said, this student at this age, at this grade, must meet, then they failed.
Yeah, testing. I'm with you. And I think I think across the board recognize that it's a problem. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. You may actually be 28 episodes in the first person to just succinctly say testing is the biggest problem in education. So congratulations on that. You're onto something here with testing. And I liked what you said about it negating those individual passions, because that's something that I've been struggling with my own kids, my own students, about, like, what are you interested in? What are you passionate about? I'm giving you a framework to do whatever you want with time. What do you want to do? I don't know. Okay, what do you do when you go home? Nothing. Come on, man. Like, give me something, you know? So I can definitely see that. And you brought up this growth-based test, so this NWEA, and I believe in growth-based. I believe in growth, but there is something important about proficiency. You know, so a student could show growth from kindergarten to 12th grade, but if it's not the right amount of growth, by the time they graduate, they're significantly behind. So how do you balance those, or how do you balance those?
Well, you have to ask yourself, what type of proficiency are you talking about? Let's say math, for example. Are you talking about numeracy? I'm okay with a proficiency benchmark with numeracy, because you should be able to graduate from high school being able to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Now, that's different from making a certain score, let's say in Algebra 3, which is, let's be real, unnecessary. And you know,
testing may not offend people as a problem, but telling them that algebra 3 isn't necessary, some math people might get a little hurt about that.
Hey, boo hoo. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care. And the reason I don't care, look, I have a doctorate, right? Now, it doesn't make me special, but what it does mean is the level of sort of expertise, knowledge that I work with is a specific set of knowledge. Now, I took a lot of years of Spanish in college. I am not proficient in it. I'm not fluent in it. I took those same courses in algebra and all those things. Now, you put a function in front of my face right now, I can't do anything with it. But if you told me what's 5 times 5, I can tell you it's 25. Because again, we're talking about basic numeracy. And the reality is, the average person in terms of recall, understanding, application, that information is relegated to what they're doing. So if you are a scientist, everything that's dealing with science in your field, you're going to be hopping with it. And I expect it. I wouldn't want a doctor who didn't know basic biology to see me. Right.
Right.
But I don't care if he knows how to speak French, you know, and I don't care if he knows about what happened with Ulysses S. Grant, or if that individual, you know, knew about the Boston Tea Party. Now, some may say, wow, you should know that. That's basic knowledge. That's not his job, you know, and I'm not going to see him for that. You know, so that's, you know, that's my issue when we talk about proficiency. What do we mean? And what is relevant in terms of proficiency? Because you can honestly live a high quality life without knowing everything they put in front of your face. And even at the college level, right? If you are not going to get a BS, at most colleges, you will not take higher levels of math and science. If you're getting a BA, they're going to give you foreign language. You may get some art, some music, a lot of maybe English classes. But your math and science courses are going to, what you have to take, one, two classes. Because it's not relevant to that type of education. Mm-hmm. And the same thing should be applied, I think, to high school in terms of proficiency, saying, what do we need these students to leave with in order to be productive? And I think what we have done in this country is try to create a certain type of intellectual individual that not everyone has an interest or an aptitude for.
Yeah, and I think that goes hand in hand with the getting everyone college ready kind of thing. And I don't think that's something we need to be doing. Not every kid should go to college, and there shouldn't be a negative stigma on not going to college. There are lots of other great opportunities, and I'm with you. I'm curious, though, again, how you balance. How do you get that balance? So a kid that struggled with numeracy, right, and they decide by the time they get to high school, all right, well, I got my numeracy proficiency, so I'm not going to do algebra 2, algebra 3. I'm just not going to take those. Now they're 15 and deciding they're not going to be an engineer. And like, I'm worried about those kinds of decisions getting pushed for earlier and earlier in a child's life while we are simultaneously living longer and longer as a species and getting to start those parts of our lives later and later. We're making the decisions that affect those earlier and earlier. And so I'm starting to worry about that gap, and not just in this case, but in other cases as well.
But we still are running into this problem of requiring students to have algebra 2, algebra 3 to graduate, and taking these state tests to graduate. And you still have dropout rates. You still have people who are not mm-hmm. graduating. So what are those requirements doing? They're not accomplishing anything. They're not, you know, so what you may have set out to accomplish, you're failing at it. We're failing at it because we are too busy, you know, ignoring the fact that I honestly could be intellectually gifted, but quite honestly, I don't care about going to a 4-year institution. I could say, man, I love working on cars. That's my jam. And even though I could graduate valedictorian of my high school and still go to a junior college for mechanics, because I don't care about that other stuff. And so when we try to set these standards and not understanding that all, you know, these students have these different interests, these passions, what kind of education are we giving our students? What are we robbing them of? The joy of learning. Because, you know, trust me, I don't care if you're 16 or you are 60, if you are forced to take a class that you have absolutely no interest in, you are not going to do well in it. As an adult, you may have a little more fortitude to push yourself through it. But I just don't see the point of making our students struggle or really having to choose, should I stay in school or should I leave because this isn't fitting me and what I want to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm there with you. I don't know that I have a vision for the whole big picture of it, but I'm with you. I'm with you in that, I guess in a simplified sort of way, some education is better than no education. Even if you consider it not 100% proficient, if it's reaching those students that are walking away, then maybe it's okay that they're not proficient in every single requirement we currently set for them. Yeah. I'm good with that. Cool. Well, you came out the gate hard, Dr. Will. You're ready to go. Question one, we're rocking and rolling. All right. Wow. I'm like pumped. Let's do this. Let's move into my second question without any kind of transition because I'm a professional. My second question for you is, what is something that you are doing that you wish all teachers would do?
I think I am thinking about my money, right? And that's one of the things where in my own podcast, where the whole shows about money come from. We have this thing in education where it's a noble profession and we're not doing this for the money. We love our children. Look, that doesn't pay your bills. That doesn't send you on vacation. You know, that doesn't send your own kids through college. That doesn't set you up for financial wealth in your earlier years. I want all educators to be focused on their money. You know, love what you do. I have no problem with that. But let's be real. Use your talents. Get that side hustle. Look for other opportunities to maximize your skills and your talents to get paid for it. Don't, you know, you want to tutor for free? Cool. But guess what you could also do? Start your side business in tutoring, bringing in extra income. So when you say, hey, you know, talking to your spouse or even yourself, let's go to Toronto. Let's go to Hawaii. You don't have to pinch pennies to do it. We got this. Let's go. Not to mention retirement. Something leaking your roof. Let's make this happen. You know, so it's to me. And I know some people may say, wow, this man's serious about that money. you know, but I am because I don't want to be without. Like I've spent a part of my childhood, you know, not having the lights off and not, you know, hand-me-downs and all those things. So as an adult, I am for sure serious about my coin. And I never want to be without, and I want to be paid for what I bring to the table, which brings me to ambassadors, right? We have a lot of educators out there who are ambassadors and they represent a lot of companies and they write for places like EdSurge and all these places for free. Stop it. These people are paid, right? EdSurge is paid. And they're getting money. They're not a nonprofit. So I'm not saying you don't do a couple of things to build your brand and get your name out there. But once people start coming to you, no more free. Because I don't do free. Will is done for free. Now, I'm not saying that if a friend reached out to me, we had that relationship, I'm going to do it. If Fast Company or Forbes called me tomorrow, can you write this article? That's Forbes and Fast Company. I'm on that. But once that got to a point to where they saw value in it, then Forbes and Fast Company got to write a check. So, yeah.
You're onto something here. I obviously, you know, money, kind of important. I think we can all agree to that. But you're onto something in that we do kind of look at money and education as this dirty thing. The only talk of money is, well, you know, I'm not in it for the money. Like, that's the only thing we ever say, or teachers don't make enough. Like, it's jokes. It's not a real conversation. And you're right. Like, yes, it's a noble profession, but you can't make a living off of martyrdom. That's not, you can't live that way. And I think you're onto something here. We, even as you were saying it initially, I'm like, oh, wow, he's going to go there. This could be interesting. People could be blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait, why? Why would anyone be upset by this? Like, we all know this is a problem. Why? Why? So why? Why do we have this stigma? Why is this this thing that we can't seem to get over in so many cases?
I don't know. I don't know if it's Florence Nightingale syndrome or what, but people, you know, they're locked into it because – I believe doctor, you know, being a doctor or healer is a noble profession, but they're serious about that money too. Now, some may say I'm going to work at this free clinic and not get paid as much money as others, but there is a shortage of general practitioners around the country. And you know why? Because no one wants to have $250,000 in debt from going to medical school mm-hmm. and then go work for $50,000 in some podunk town. Mm-hmm. No one's trying to do that. They're going to become heart surgeons and plastic surgeons and OBGYNs. Why? They love it, but it doesn't hurt to drive a Jaguar either. Now, it is not in my dream to drive a Jaguar. I'd rather own an Audi. But there's nothing wrong with wanting to get paid for your labor. Because guess what? Us with our degrees, I guarantee you when your car breaks down, that mechanic is wanting to get his money. When that HVAC guy come out and take care of the air conditioner, he's going to want to get his money. And we need to have that same sort of hustle and understanding that there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, enjoying it, loving it. Now, I'm not saying being greedy. I'm not here to take advantage of anyone. But I am saying that there's nothing wrong with saying, man, my life is not only comfortable, but it's pretty doggone good. And I think we need to understand that because a lot of people get paid from what we do, particularly when I mentioned the whole ambassador stuff. So you got people, they're applying, they're becoming, you know, Google educators, innovators, and, you know, Google says, hey, you know, do this and do that. They're not getting paid.
Yeah, most of those you pay to be. You have to pay to be certified.
You know, you're not, they're not writing you a check, but you're out there singing their praises. You got all those badges on your blog and all those affiliations, but you're not seeing one single dime. Now, I'm going to say this because I said that I am a Schoology ambassador. I'm not getting paid for that. I do that because of pure love for the product and what we're doing. But I will say this, Schoology has been, you know, really awesome in terms of the relationships I've been able to build with the people. And I'm in there again, as an ambassador, I'm not receiving not one dime and I'm not asking them for a dime either. But again, if you were to go to my blog, you're not going to see a NASCAR type situation going on where I'm because I just refuse to put all of this energy into something, they reap the benefits from it, and I don't get anything because you giving me a spot to speak at a conference for you. Okay. If that's a part about, if you're doing that strategically to raise your own brand, to step out and get to the next level, fine. But if you're doing that because you're just happy to be associated with that company, stop it. Because you can play.
Yep. You know, I'm drawing a connection here, and bear with me. One of the things I know about you is you put a lot of effort into you as your brand. You know, you think a lot about your brand, and from that mindset comes this idea of sort of brand image and how you appear on the outside and how you represent yourself. And you kind of made a comment about the ambassador thing and not being NASCAR, not making them overload your brand. And I'm wondering, I'm connecting that in my head to teachers who say things like, well, I'm just a teacher. I don't have anything to share. I don't have anything to give. I don't have anything to put out there. And I'm wondering if we took that brand mentality, if all teachers were able to look at themselves as a brand, as a valuable brand to be monetized, would we start to address some of these issues? Is there an inherent lack, like belief that we aren't deserving of most teachers and don't make that next step?
I think some are. I've seen teachers' comments on Twitter, on blogs, who say, I'm not a brand. They say, I'm not a brand, I'm a teacher. You are a brand. Now, you're not Coca-Cola. You know, you're not Tide. I don't look at myself in that same light. I mean, your brand is plain and simple, and Jeff Bezos said this, your brand is what people say about you when you are not in the room. And so when it comes to my brand, or I talk to other educators, is do you be you to the best of your abilities? And get out there and share your stuff, because you have to, look out for your digital footprint as well. But don't be afraid to step out. And even if you don't want to be an entrepreneur, have an entrepreneurial mindset that you bring to your classroom of, I'm going to be creative, I'm going to be a risk taker, I'm going, you know, all of this passion that I have, I'm going to just bring it here, and we're going to do all these awesome things with my students. I'm just not going to just do rote memorization and worksheets. You know, we're going to do all of these wonderful things. My students are going to have ownership. We're going to go on this wonderful educational ride of learning. Have that. But again, let's get paid. You know, I just can't say that enough, Brad. Like, let's get paid. Why would you? Seriously, I do this podcast for the love. You do it for the love. But I am also looking for some sponsors, because as I'm bringing my love to it, who say I can't get paid for it? Mm-hmm. And I'll do that to teachers. When you're out there and you're doing all of these blogs and you're presenting at all of these conferences, and I know people who, in terms of presenting at conferences, they have gone, just flown all over the country on their own dime, mm-hmm. because they love it. Nuh-uh. That's money out of my pocket. You know, if you want me like that, I want a check. And I used to be afraid to say it out loud, thinking, what would people think of me? Mm-hmm. But I don't care anymore. I'll tell people, I'm not doing this for free. So I spoke at a conference this summer, and then I waited, I chilled, I got the feedback. Great feedback, right? Very blessed. But then I reached out to them to say, let's do this again. Here's my rate. Now, if they want me to come back, either they're going to negotiate or they're going to flat out say, here's your check. But I'm not going back for free.
You're saying this to me on the day that I got my approval to present at ISTE, by the way. And I'm like still on cloud nine about getting that, because I've always wanted to present there and I'm doing it for free. Thankfully, I have a school paying for me to go instead of me paying out of my own pocket. But so I'm sorry. I'm just in my head. I'm going, oh, wait, I'm presenting at ISTE. I'm like bouncing and getting excited.
And ISTE's dope. ISTE's dope. Oh,
I love that conference. It makes me so happy. It kind of leads in, you talked a little bit about entrepreneurial mindset, and we talked a little before we started recording, but I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, because it, in the best way, it is kind of all over the place. You know, you talk about a lot of different things, and you mentioned this at the beginning of that question, but you know, your show is in a lot of different directions. You'll have a teacher on there, and then you'll have something about insurance or how to balance your checkbook or money, or you know, an entrepreneur, or, you know, the leader of a media organization in the tech valley. So can you tell me a little bit about sort of what your show is and what your vision for it is?
My show, I would say, first and foremost, my show focuses on what it means to go digital. And so the bulk of my podcast focus on going one-to-one, blended learning, teaching online? What does professional development look like to move teachers forward? But also have a great passion for business and entrepreneurship and different careers. And so I bring on these people because I've joked around and telling my wife that I'm out here to educate the whole teacher. I'm also selfishly want people to come to my show and not just listen to one episode because they found it on Twitter or some Google search, but get there and stay. So I want the content to be varied and so awesome that they stay. And in my mind, I'm hoping if you get there and you hear this episode on blended learning, and then it goes off and someone says, "Hey, we're going to be talking about buying a house today," that someone to sit there and go, "Oh, well, let me listen to this. I want to buy a house, or I just bought a house. What does that look like?" So that's sort of what I'm doing. And also, and again, when I'm talking about educators, I want them to think about themselves, their money differently, and not just I'm doing this for the love and nobility of it. You know, you get paid for it because you're not going to work every day for free. I don't care how much you love it. You're still getting a check, and understand what does that check mean. And so I've had guests on my show who used to be teachers, but they left and became entrepreneurs. And so that's where that other piece come from.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. The educate the whole teacher. That should be your tagline. That should be part of your show title. Like it's such a cool, because it is the majority of the time it's education, but we all need to take a break from that every now and then. You know, we need to step away and, okay, today I need to learn something that's not going to directly impact my classroom, but it's going to impact me. And I think that's cool that your show provides that digression at times. I think that's a great vision for what it is you're doing. I think it's just, it's very, very powerful. And the energy you bring to it is awesome. Like I said, you bring so much energy when you're in front of a microphone. It's very cool.
Well, thank you. And it took me a long time to get there. It is, you know, when you say, "Oh, this is your 29th show," or Dan is like, "Yo, this is my 30th show." I'm like, I've done so many, I can't even count. I started my podcast 3 years ago. And when about 4 months ago, I kind of went back and listened to some of those older shows. And I was like, "Ooh, some of them were rough." And some of them, I was like, "Okay, that's not bad. And it really, in March or April of this, that's when things started to kind of change for me, because I had got into a funk and I wasn't podcasting and I was just, things just wasn't working for me. And I spoke with LaVonna Roth. And she just said, "Hey, you just got to let that stuff go and shine." And, you know, LaVonna, you know, she's awesome like that.
Yes, she is.
After that conversation, I'm just going to do this. Okay. I'm going to be me regardless. In order for me to be better at this podcast and in life and at my job, I have to get better at being myself. And so this is not about modeling or mimicking anyone else or getting caught up in the greatness of Don Wittrich's podcast, that boy is bad.
Yeah.
And not trying to compare yourself to other people, you know, just saying, do you. And after that, I just let it go. And I just started doing shows. Not that I was thinking too much about it, but I just decided, hey, I'm going to do this and I'm just going to give it all I got. And I thank you for saying that it's been a good listen, but that's sort of how I came to be where I am now.
Well, you're welcome. It's cool. And I hope my audience, for sure, all five of you, will walk your way over to Dr. Will's show, because it's definitely worth the listen. You bring a good perspective. So I appreciate it. I want to move into my third question, and This one always leads us off in some different directions, so we'll see where we end up. But my third question for you is, who is the best teacher you've ever had?
Ooh.
Ah, okay. I got you, right?
Yeah, that was different. Wow. I can't say anyone in K through 12. I know that for sure. I can't say that. Because I have really two, but they have the same thing in common. So it was Dr. Blackwell and Dr. Elise LeBlanc, who was my dissertation chair. And the great thing about, you know, Dr. LeBlanc was when we first had our first conversation and she saw, you know, so, okay, you're going to write about this for your dissertation. She didn't shy away from it. She didn't go, wow, this is new. She said, this is very interesting. Let's roll. And the great thing about it was, you know, she told me that, you know, some students don't like much contact. They don't want to be bothered. But she said, if you want to talk frequently, if you want to do this, I'm going to roll with you. And she always encouraged me because, again, my dissertation wasn't part of the normal canon of what most education dissertations are about. And so she just really encouraged me to just roll with it. And quite honestly, she was a roll dog for real, ride or die. Because, you know, you hear horror stories of people who say, man, I turned in this. I had to wait a month, 2 months to get feedback. If I turned something in on Monday, by Wednesday, I had my feedback.
Wow.
And we just worked that well. You know, every week we're just rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. And so she was very, you know, complimentary and very encouraging and empowering. And I remember asking her when I got closer to my defense, I said, what if I don't make it? And bomb the defense, she said, not going to happen. We'll never let you get to that point. I would say she was the greatest one because she did not try to steal my joy and try to steer me into another direction. She was like, this is new. I like this. Let's go. And so I would say that would be, she would be the greatest educator I have had.
You know, it's interesting to me, you don't have anyone in K-12, and I'm assuming that you were in education before your doctorate. So how did you end up in the education sphere once you got out of school?
Oh, man. Okay. I went to film school, and I graduated, and in my mind, I said, okay, I need to write this script. I need a job that would allow me freedom to write the script. Now, bartending or being a waiter never crossed my mind, but being a substitute teacher did. And I did that and had a great experience with the young people. And even formed a relationship with a Spanish teacher there. And she asked me to work with her students on preparing for a state language fair. And I worked with the students. I choreographed their salsa routine, a little salsa. And they went to the fair, performed very well. Kids got a trophy. I was like, oh, y'all got some skills now. And that experience with me, because I knew that I have a philosophy in education where it's exposure plus experiences equals expectations. So when you expose students to different people, places, things, thoughts outside of their own neighborhood and they have that exposure, they begin to raise their own expectations. So you as the teacher really don't have to do anything. And quite honestly, you can't. Because they have to do the work. And from that, I was just chilling at the house. And I got a letter from the career center at my alma mater, and it was AmeriCorps. And I was like, okay. And I just started going through it. And I ended up in Boston, working for UMass Boston, from Mississippi. First time being in that type of weather. And worked for a college prep program, preparing kids. Again, a very awesome experience because I had freedom. And so I could do all of this programming for kids and college tours and bring in guest speakers and do all these wonderful things to really get students thinking about life beyond their neighborhood. And then I got into a situation where I said, I have a bachelor's degree. I'm the lowest man on the totem pole. This is not enough for me because I won't be able to rise. And I did meet my wife and we got married, but I moved back to Mississippi where I then went on and got my other degrees and still didn't see myself where I am now. So you're right now, still didn't see myself where I am right now. You know, there is a verse in the Quran that says, you know, they plan, man plans, and God is the best of all planners. Trust me, I got this job. This is crazy. I've told people this. No, so I know Eric Scheniger, right? That's my homie. So Eric tells me, Will, how far are you from Jackson? I said, I'm just down the hall highway. Never tells me why. Right? So he comes to keynote at our state ISTE affiliate conference. So during this keynote, Eric decides to give me a shout out. So I just kind of stand up, do this. So he, afterwards, I kind of walk up to him and say, hey, what's going on? The then tech director of the district I work for was there. And I just, he and I had come across each other on Twitter. And so he knew some of the stuff that I was doing. And I had been presenting at that conference for, you know, the past 3 or 4 years. I walk up to him. I say, hey, you need to give me a job. He said, okay. And 6 weeks later, I started working with the district. And I've been there ever since.
It's amazing what this thing will do, right? Like this connections and the power of, I mean, without sounding too sappy, the power of the internet, you know, it's like, how do we get here sometimes? It's amazing. That's such a cool story that so much tangible came out of your drive. I mean, it's your involvement on the internet, your involvement in those kinds of discussions and going out of your way to meet these people like Eric that led to that. So it's not like it fell in your lap per se. You had to hustle and make it happen. And I just think it's cool that that kind of thing is possible. Like, it's just neat.
It's awesome. Yeah, I just never, you know, I never thought about myself, you know, with this job or working in a school district like this. You know, in my mind, it was like, okay, I'm getting this doctorate. I'm going to be working at a university. I'm going to be doing this. And, you know, here I am almost 5 years later, because this is my fifth year with the district. And so it's been an interesting ride.
That's cool. Very cool. You know, Will, I often talk about there being a constant vein through those three questions and the way people answer them and finding connections from one to the next. And I think with you, you're the vein. Like, you're just you. And I think you made a comment about how Lavana Roth reminded you to sort of be yourself. And I was lucky enough to see her present, actually. And I didn't know I was going to get a chance. I was at a thing and she shows up as like a surprise keynote. And I was like, well, cool. That's neat. And so I totally get where you're coming from with her and just saying, just be you. Like, but I think you're the vein. Like, while people drove you and helped you, it's about you. You're presenting yourself. You're throwing yourself out there and good things are happening. I think that's a lesson that a lot of teachers can take. And it's not about sitting passive on the sidelines. It's about working that side hustle and going out there and doing it. building your brand, building yourself, and doing your thing.
Well, thank you. I mean, I thank you for the compliment. You know, alhamdulillah, I take no credit for this whatsoever. I mean, I enjoy it. I really do. But I can't take credit for it because I still could have done all of these things and nothing could have come of it. So I had no part in it in terms of what happened. Now, yes, you can say I got out there, but I enjoy it, though. I truly enjoy it. I remember I was spending so much time on Twitter and my wife would ask me, well, why are you on Twitter? And I said, because of this. And then she got on Twitter and now she's on Twitter and she spends a lot of time on Twitter as well. And she presents at conferences and does all of these amazing things. I just believe in the power of being connected, because not only are you able to get the greatest PD ever, and I tell teachers that, and I say, listen, I get paid to deliver PD, but Twitter is everything. It's going to be the greatest PD you'll ever get. But I enjoy the connections beyond that, where your networking is as such where people know what you can do and you know what they can do. And so when you get in situations where, you know, I've had AdSurge reach out to me saying, we're looking for such and such. Do you know anyone? Oh, yeah, I know this teacher. Oh, here. The same thing with me. What took my career to the next level was actually Tech Edge magazine wanted to do a piece on Schoology and learning management systems. And so they reached out to Twitter. And then the people at Schoology said, you need to interview Dr. Will for this piece. And once they did that, and that piece was a huge piece. I got that thing framed because I got those copies. I was like, I didn't expect it to be that big and beautiful. And they actually put it in our school colors. I was like, this is some awesome. It's fantastic. But from that, things just started to kind of like rise for me. And then they came back to me and they say, hey, you want to write an article in this upcoming issue? And I was like, is there a check? And they're like, yes. I said, then yes. And so I wrote two articles for them, again, for the pay. And, you know, from that, I've done, you know, webinars, and I'm now writing for Schoology Exchange, but that's just a separate little piece as well. I'm a contributor. always keep that in mind, people. If you trust me, never free. I should put that on my tag, never free. But all those are just, you know, took me to the next level. I'm trying to get like Eric and Tom, quite honestly. I'm trying to get to that point to where, you know, and I have not asked them about their money. So I'm not going to say for sure I know what they're making, but I know they are out there and they are huge rock stars and they're doing their thing. And I am so proud of those two dudes. But I want to get to that point to where they're just like, we got to have Dr. Will here. And I'm there as long as the check is there. And so people are going to listen to this show, Brad. Like, Will is just crazy about that money. But I don't want, you know. But that's what I love about it, is just being connected and everybody growing and learning and supporting one another in their ventures.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's a pretty great place to close it out, because I think, you know, that's just you. You are you. So tell my audience real quick how they can get a hold of you. Where are you at? Where can we find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at I Am Dr. Will. The podcast is on iTunes and SoundCloud. So if you just do a search on those sites for the Dr. Will Show, you'll find me there. I'm going to start posting every Wednesday a new podcast at 6 a.m. in the morning. And in fact, tomorrow I'm actually doing another money show with Stephanie O'Connell. So nice. Hopefully you'll watch it and share with everyone you know.
I will do. Absolutely. Hey, Dr. Will, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely. 1,000 thank yous to Dr. Will for bringing your unique style and energy to my show. It was a ton of fun to record, and I am sure my audience will enjoy listening to it. If you want to connect with Dr. Will, he's on Twitter, at IamDrWill. And you can also find his podcast wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for The Dr. Will Show, or clicking the link in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from you. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Until next week, remember that it isn't only okay to make that money, but that's exactly what you should be doing. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.